Brothers and sisters, this evening we come to the second in our series, the studies on the Lamentations of Jeremiah, and we look forward shortly to hearing Brother Howard Cook dealing with the theme of affliction, causes and deliverance. Brother Howard has asked us to introduce his address by reading from Lamentations chapter 3 and verses 1 to 36. Lamentations chapter 3, verses 1 to 36. So we're now very pleased to ask Brother Howard Cook to speak to us on the second in this series on the Lamentations of Jeremiah, the theme of affliction, causes, and deliverance. Brother Howard.
Dear brethren and sisters, imagine for a moment a lowering sky with a dark cloud stretching across it from horizon to horizon. But, almost miraculously it seems, there is a break in that cloud, a shaft light shining through, a beautiful contrast to the pervading darkness. That's how I see Lamentations, or how we can see Lamentations. Pervading gloom, except for one shaft of light, as will become apparent as we progress this evening in our study of this book. Well, the book of Lamentations shares with us the overwhelming sense of loss that accompanied the destruction of the city, the temple, the ritual in Jerusalem, and the exile of the inhabitants of Judah by the Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC, the culmination of a gradual process of weakening of the kingdom and of successive captivities. This was the culmination. But even then, there was hope. And so in the Jewish tradition, we are told that Orthodox Jews customarily read this book aloud in its entirety on the ninth day of Ab. That's sometime at the end of July, beginning of August, the traditional date of the destruction of Solomon's temple in 586 BC, as well as Herod's temple in 70 AD. Many also read it each week at the Wailing Wall in the old city of Jerusalem. The title of the Book of Lamentations, the Hebrew title, is in fact the Hebrew word ikar, which means how. That's the very first verse of the first chapter of this book. How lonely sits the city that was full of people. How like a widow is she who was great among the nations. And the next chapter, chapter 2, also begins, how the Lord has covered the daughter of Zion with a cloud in his anger. And indeed the final book, chapter 4, begins how, again that word again, the gold has become dimmed, how changed the fine gold. A telling exclamation, drawing the listener, the reader, to behold the object of the series of lamentations that this book consists of. Indeed, Jewish tradition, again we're told, also knows this book as Quinot, which is the Hebrew for lamentations, which is also the title given to it by the Septuagint and the Latin Vulgate, hence the title in our English Bible. Well, as far as the author of this book is concerned, It is an anonymous book. It's not given a direct person as having written it under inspiration. But it's not unreasonable to ascribe it to Jeremiah, describing and lamenting the destruction of the kingdom of Judah in 586 BC. Laments are very much associated with Jeremiah. Indeed, in one of the earlier references to Jeremiah before the in the historical books of the Old Testament, in fact, in the book of Chronicles, there is a reference at the time to Jeremiah lamenting at the time of the death of King Josiah, which must have been a very tragic occurrence if we consider the significance of that king as a great reforming king amidst the wickedness of Judah, to a faithful man like Jeremiah. Chapter 35, the second book of Chronicles, Jeremiah also lamented for Josiah. And to this day, all the singing men and the singing women speak of Josiah in their lamentations. They made it a custom in Israel, and indeed they are written in the Laments, another book entirely, which I believe hasn't actually survived in the canon of Scripture. These are then laments for King Josiah, not the lamentations of our book of Lamentations. And also in the prophecy of Jeremiah, we are told about Jeremiah's lamentations in prospect as he considered the wickedness and the fate of his fellow countrymen. Just a couple of verses, but chapter 7 of Jeremiah, verse 29. Cut off your hair and cast it away, and take up a lamentation on the desolate heights, for the Lord has rejected and forsaken the generation of his wrath. And then over to the next chapter, verse 21 of chapter 8. For the hurt of the daughter of my people, I am hurt, I am mourning, astonishment has taken hold of me. And there is, so we are told, a similarity of style and vocabulary between the books of Jeremiah and Lamentations. And then Jeremiah's life and experiences, not only as a prophet predicting terrible events of siege, destruction and captivity, but also as an eyewitness, and also someone who himself experienced imprisonment, hatred and enmity on the part of his fellow countrymen for telling them about what was going to happen to him. It is therefore not unreasonable to give him the authorship of the book that so vividly describes the events of the destruction of Jerusalem. And so we can say that as for the date of this book, the graphic immediacy of what Jeremiah is describing here indicates some time within the decade following 586 BC. Perhaps we could also refer to literary features of this book. It is, as must be quite obvious, a book of poetry. And in fact, five laments correspond to each of our five chapters of the Book of Lamentations. Each lament is closely related to the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. You may have noticed that each chapter has 22 verses. Chapter 36 has 66 verses, which is, of course, a multiple of three. And indeed, the division between each verse is indicated, certainly in more modern translations in the King James, by a paragraph break following each third verse. And so it's not surprising to learn that chapters 1 to 4 are acrostic poems. Each of the 22 verses begins with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In the case of chapter 3, each stanza of three verses begins with a successive letter of the alphabet. In other words, far from being a rather formless collection of woes and misery and all the other things that are often associated with Jeremiah, as has been said, the use of the alphabet as a formal structure indicates that however passionate these laments, they were composed with studied care, as one writer puts it. And according to rabbinic commentators, this alphabetical arrangement is also said to show that, quoting again, Israel had sinned from Aleph to Tor, from A to Z, as it were. Just as in Psalm 119, which is also an acrostic, an acrostic psalm, the implication is that the law should command a man's whole attention and desire from Aleph to Tor, from A to Z, again. Also, the first four poems make use of a halting rhythm known by the Hebrew word for dirge. It's apparently a 3-2 rhythm, a rhythm which is also found in Jeremiah. If you think of 1-2-3-1-2, that kind of rhythm, a dirge-like rhythm. And we should also remember that parallelism is an important part of Hebrew poetry, where a similar thought is varied 2 or 3 times in the lines of a verse or a stanza. And so we go on to look at the outline of the Book of Lamentations. And here I'm going to be just quoting verses from this book to illustrate the points. Chapter 1 is about Jerusalem's misery and desolation, the first two verses of chapter 1. How lonely sits the city that was full of people. How like a widow is she, who was great among the nations, the princess among the provinces, has become a slave. She weeps bitterly in the night. Her tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, she has none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. Verse 6, and from the daughter of Zion, all her splendor has departed. Her princes have become like deer that find no pasture. In the days of her affliction and roaming, Jerusalem remembers all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old. When her people fell into the hand of the enemy with no one to help her, the adversaries saw her and mocked at her downfall. The second chapter tells us about God's anger against his people. Verse 1 of chapter 2, how the Lord has covered the daughter of Zion with a cloud in his anger. He cast down from heaven to the earth. Verse 4, standing like an enemy, he has bent his bow with his right hand like an adversary, that's the Lord. He has slain all who were pleasing to his eye. On the tent of the daughter of Zion, he has poured out his fury like fire. And then chapter 3, we get Judah's complaint, if we can term it like that, at the way they've been treated by the Lord, which becomes a basis for consolation. Verse 1 of chapter 3, I am the man, this is now personalized to an individual, I am the man who has seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He has led me and made me to walk in darkness and not in light. Surely he has turned his hand against me time and time again throughout the day. And the prophet goes on to detail almost a Job-like record of afflictions that have been aimed at the children of Judah by the Lord. Verse 13, he has caused the arrows of his quiver to pierce my loins. I have become the ridicule of all my people. But that complaint becomes the basis for consolation. Verse 21, this I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. Through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. A key passage in the book of Lamentations. And then chapter 4 indicates a contrast between Zion's past and Zion's present. Verse 1 of chapter 4, how the gold that festooned the palaces and the temple of Jerusalem in the past, how the gold has become dim. How changed the fine gold. The stones of the sanctuary are scattered at the head of every street. The precious sons of Zion, valuable as fine gold, how they are regarded as clay pots in the hand of the potter. Verse 12, the kings of the earth and all the inhabitants of the world would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy could enter the gates of Jerusalem. Once upon a time, such events as those which have happened in Jerusalem would have been unthinkable, but happen they have. And so, finally, in chapter 5, there is Judah's appeal for God's forgiveness. Verse 1 of chapter 5, remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Look and behold our approach. Our inheritance has been turned over to aliens and our houses to foreigners. And so he goes on. But there is that plea for God to remember his people once more. Verse 19, you, O Lord, the final verses of the book, you, O Lord, remain forever, your throne from generation to generation. Why do you forget us forever and forsake us for so long a time? Turn us back to you, O Lord, and we will be destroyed. Renew our days of old, unless you have utterly rejected us and are very angry with us. So that's an outline of the five chapters of the book. And so we need to perhaps just look at some of the themes and the teaching of the book of Lamentations. First of all, it tells us, doesn't it, about the horrors of 586 BC. The wholesale devastation and slaughter which was experienced by all classes of the people of Judah in Jerusalem. First of all, Kings, chapter 2, verse 6. He has done violence to his tabernacle, as it were a garden. He has destroyed his palace of assembly. The Lord has caused appointed feasts and Sabbath to be forgotten in Zion. In his burning indignation, he has spurned the king and the priest. Again, another verse from chapter 4, verse 20. The breath of our nostrils, the anointed of the Lord, was caught in their pits, of whom we said, under his shadow we shall live among the nations. The Lord's anointed was taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar, taken to Babylon, and there he died. So, but it wasn't just the kings who were devastated by this experience. Princes also, we've already seen that verse 6 of chapter 1, from the daughter of Zion, all her splendor has departed. Her princes have become like deer that find no pasture. Again, if we go back to chapter 4, verse 7, her Nazarites were brighter than snow and whiter than milk. And we believe that the word, well, in fact, your margins may well tell you that an alternative rendering for that word Nazarite is nobles. Your nobles were brighter than snow and whiter than milk. They were very splendid, more ruddy in body than rubles. They were a splendid class of people. But now their appearance is blacker than soot. They go unrecognized in the streets. Their skin clings to their bones. It has become as dry as wood. So this once splendid class of people have been really reduced and withered. The same is true of the elders as well. And also the priests. We've seen references to how the priests were now a despised group of people. And even the prophets. Well, we know all about the false prophets who countered Jeremiah's prophecies. Perhaps they're the people who are being referred to in chapter 2. Her gates have sunk in the ground. He has destroyed and broken her bars. Her kings and princes are among the nations. The law is no more, and her prophet find no vision from the Lord. Now God is no longer revealing himself through his prophets. But it wasn't just the exalted classes of the Jews. It was also the common people, the ordinary folk. The people who are referred to as the daughter of my people. My eyes fail with tears, my heart is troubled because of the destruction of the daughter of my people, because the children and the infants faint in the streets of the city. That's verse 11 of chapter 2. And then in the third chapter, verse 48, my eyes overflow with rivers of water for the destruction of the daughter of my people. Ordinary folk suffering with the people, with the exalted people who probably led them astray in many ways. Starving mothers reduced to cannibalism. Verse 20 of chapter 2. See, O Lord, and consider to whom you have done this. Should the women eat their offspring, the children they have cuddled? And then there's another verse in chapter 4. The hands of the compassionate women have cooked their own children. They have become food for them in the destruction of the daughter of my people. Appalling scenes and experiences must have been produced by the last days of the siege of Jerusalem. And the flower of Judah's citizenry were dragged off into ignominious exile. Chapter 1 tells us, Judah has gone into captivity under affliction and hard servitude. She dwells among the nations. She finds no rest. All her persecutors overtake her in dire straits. A reminder, surely, of the predictions of Deuteronomy 28. And then verse 18, the Lord is righteous, for I rebelled against his commandment. Hear now, all peoples, and behold my sorrow, my virgins and my young men have gone into captivity. But of course, the Babylonians were merely instruments of divine retribution. God himself has destroyed his city and people. Verse 12 of chapter 1. Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by, behold and see if there is any sorrow like my sorrow, which has been brought on me, which the Lord has inflicted on me in the day of his fierce anger? God's action was not arbitrary. Blatant sin in defiance of God and covenant-breaking rebellion were the root causes of his people's woe. Her adversaries have become the master, verse 5 of chapter 1. Her enemies prosper, for the Lord has afflicted her because of the multitude of her transgressions. Her children have gone into captivity before the enemy. Although weeping is to be expected, verse 16 tells us about chapter 1, for these things I weep, my eye overflows with water. Although weeping is to be expected, and cries for redress against the enemy are understandable, verse 22 of chapter 1, let all their wickedness come before you, and do to them as you have done to me. Although weeping is to be expected and cries for redress are understandable, the proper response in the wake of judgment is sincere, heartfelt contrition. And so verse 40 of chapter 3, let us search out and examine our ways and turn back to the Lord. Let us lift our hearts and hands to God in heaven. We have transgressed and rebelled. You have not pardoned. Which, of course, is what true contrition should lead to. And so the book begins with lament and rightly ends with repentance. And so we've considered a whole catalogue of the horrors that were inflicted on the city at the time of their captivity. But in the middle of this catalogue of woe, the Book of Lamentations focuses on the goodness of God. Perhaps amazingly so, when we consider the suffering that God has brought upon his people. And this is the shaft of light that we spoke about at the outset, amidst the pervading gloom of this book. And we get it in the middle of that chapter 3, that third chapter, the verses that Brother Alan read to us this evening, verses 21 to 26, which tells us about the Lord who has brought this affliction on his people, but in whom there is hope. Because the prophet tells us that he is, first of all, he is the Lord of hope, verse 21. This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. 24, the Lord is my portion, says my soul, therefore I hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. So he's the Lord of hope. He's also the Lord of love. Verse 22, through the Lord's mercies, we are not consumed because his compassions fail not. Extraordinary when we consider the extent of the suffering of his people, there was still hope possible in the compassion of God. And God is also the Lord of faithfulness. Verse 23, they are new every morning. His compassions, they are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. But he's also the Lord of salvation. It is good, verse 26, it is good that one should hope and wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. In spite of all the evidence that there seems to be to the contrary, perhaps, his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. And indeed, we can see that in Jeremiah's own experience, in the persecution that he suffered, that we're told about in the book of Jeremiah, the hatred of his enemies, the imprisonment that he suffered, even being let down into that cistern, that underground dungeon, left to languish in the mire. Verse 52 of this third chapter. Verse 52, my enemies, this must surely be the prophet talking, my enemies, without cause, hunted me down like a bird. They silenced my life in the pit. That must be a reference to at least one of his experiences of imprisonment, and threw stones at me. Again, we get the mire, don't we, here? The waters flowed over my head. I said, I am cut off. Quite literally, it must have been a very terrifying experience, being plunged into that wet dungeon, that wet pit. I called on your name, O Lord, from the lowest pit. You have heard my voice. Do not hide your ear from my sighing, from my cry for help. You drew near on the day I called on you and said, do not fear. God answered his prayer in the midst of the grimmest of circumstances. God was very faithful to Jeremiah in the way that he can be faithful to others. And of course, therein, Jeremiah became a type of Jesus. His own experiences of death and resurrection, through which we have a guarantee of hope. Hope in the future, no matter how black circumstances might seem at the moment. And so we, at the beginning, imagine, didn't we, a lowering sky, dark cloud stretching across it, but a break in the cloud, a shaft of light, a beautiful contrast shining through. That surely is the most important way in which we can see lamentation, pervading gloom except for this type, this shaft of light. And that, of course, has implications for us. There is, of course, and we've given plentiful examples of it this evening, a great deal in Lamentations that is depressing as a very graphic picture of the tragedy that enveloped Judah, Jerusalem, its leader and people in 586 BC at the hands of the Babylonians. In one sense, of course, that tragedy was deserved. The kingdom of God in the past, ruled by a son of David, had become thoroughly corrupt. Not even the presence of the Lord's anointed on the throne could stop the corruption. In fact, very often the kings encouraged it, and so they became the prime victims of the judgment of the Babylonians. The kingdom of God had, in the past, had not heeded God's warnings through its prophets, right through to Jeremiah, who then became a witness of the devastating punishment that was unleashed upon this corrupt kingdom. The link between their sin and their suffering reminds us of the principle stated by the Apostle James. When desire has conceived, this is quoting from the Revised Standard Version, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Yet the punishment was almost too great for them to bear, incommensurate even. God had become their enemy, or so it seemed. Perhaps there's a type there of ourselves. We are like that, aren't we? As sons of Adam, we share in his punishment. In one sense, of course, in our experiences of as sons and daughters of Adam, mortal men and women, fallible as we are, it's no more than we deserve. Yet, as we face life's difficulties, trials and tragedies, they can seem insurmountable, perhaps more than we deserve, more than we can bear. Like Job, God can seem to be our enemy. Is there anything left for us to hope for? Well, the answer, of course, and this is the message of the book of Lamentations we submit, the answer is an affirmative one. Yes, there is something to hope for. The promise that beckons us every morning as we face the new day, as we wake up every morning to the bright sunshine that follows the darkness of the light that of the darkness that was with us when we fell asleep. His compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness.